We river dance to keep from crying. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciation to the fellas of Payne and Pendergast. Always have fun in that cross.
Yes, sir.
I got to admit that. All right, let's get going on a Tuesday here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. 713-572-4610 is the number to text because that is the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Get involved with the program if you could, please, and thank you there or also on the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers live streams, both on the YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, and on Twitch, 610 Houston. I am wearing a cowboy hat right now, and it is about 95% just to make me feel better after a late night clutch loss from the Rockets that, you know, just a few moments or a few things within that game decided between you having a series that was bright and had you gave you an opportunity to really, you know, clamor for something as you continue to like build this team. And now you're in a very precarious situation, down 3-1 to the Golden State Warriors after that loss. What haunts you the most about this particular loss? Or maybe you can even go with this road trip, like this swing of the series. 713-572-4610.
I'm gonna give you several haunting things that come to mind, but I don't think they're gonna haunt this team the most. Number one, and we mentioned it with Sean and Seth, free throws. I mean that's haunting,
dude.
That's haunting.
Oh my god.
I mean that's just that it was 12 missed free throws, several clutch free throws. That is a and here's where I'm going. There are a lot of reasons. It was a one possession game. But there are a lot of reasons that you can kind of point to and say, boy, if they had only done that different. Okay, so that's one.
Well, I mean, we don't have to run by that. Like, you shoot 61% from the free throw line. We're talking college basketball numbers. And even then we're talking about, hey, y'all might want to pick this up.
Yeah.
Like, that is deeply frustrating. And, I mean, it's one here and one there for a lot of guys who, I think one of the things about that is you got, Amen Thompson misses a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, like, Jalen Green missing a couple. And the reason why I point out those guys in particular, and, I mean, there's other guys that you can point to as well, but the reason why I point out those guys in particular is that they need a portion of their game to be aggressive towards the rim.
Sure.
And especially for Jalen Green, who sometimes has been in this series a little lackluster finishing, if you're getting aggressive down to the paint, one of the things that you're attempting to do is draw fouls.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to be lethal on the back end, if you're not going to make the team pay on the other end on the free throw line, you neuter that even as well. And I think that is the insidious part about this. It's not just that you're missing those points here or there to the tune of 12 missed free throws when you lost a 3-point game, right?
Yeah.
You do the math. That's very simple.
Yeah.
But on top of that, is it also changes the aggression that you need to have in the game. So like in the entire play style shifts because you're not able to capitalize on the other team's fouls because you're attacking into the paint.
And here's the other part of it that is really haunting. It wasn't just this game. Remember after game two and they had made all those free throws, and we kind of discussed, you know, bringing up the point, well, can they just flip the switch and all of a sudden be a good free throw shooting team? No, they can't. We know the answer. So that's haunting. Now, the obvious one, and with very good reason, and it might have significant long-term effects, is Jalen Green. I mean, I was listening to Charles Barkley, not after the game, I went straight to bed, but this morning, he just put it out, you know, very eloquently, as Chuck is wont to do. You just cannot, in his own way, you just cannot have that. You cannot go single digits in 3 out of 4 games, and to the point where, even if he bounces back and scores 30, you know, tomorrow night, I think the ship has left the yard already because there's no pressure on him now. They're down 3-1. They're down 3-1. You know,
right? That's right. Let's not skip the. Let's not bury the lead. I guess is the way to say.
So it's like, oh, look, he came back and scored 30. No. These first 4 games, which kind of established, you know, the tone and probably the outcome of the series, he was a nowhere man. Like he did not show up, and you can't have that.
No, and this is beyond the idea of the defense kind of taking you out of this. It is deeply problematic when your coach has to look at you and basically decide that you are a net detriment to what's happening here as a foundational player for what you're doing, right? I think you get to what back to what you were talking about, like, hey, you have 38, but this is the issue with this particular player in Jalen Green in the up and down nature of it. It's one of the reasons why consistency has been the watchword for him all season long is when you get to these types of situations to try and be a 16 game player as opposed to an 82 game player, obviously pointing to the playoffs versus the regular season, it is on any given night, the people who produce on any given night are the stars. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that have that expectation. The people that are, hey, I can give you 38 and then maybe I give you 8 and maybe I'll put in 15.
Yeah.
Like those are role players.
Those are role players.
And that has been one of the major questions is, can you find that? Now, I do want to bring you to the prior to Beaumont, Texas himself. You know who I'm talking about.
That's my third one.
Kendrick Perkins?
No, no. Oh, you're talking about what he said about him.
Yes, what he said about Jalen Green.
About Tomball, Texas.
No, no, no. The prior to Beaumont, Texas.
Yeah.
Would Jimmy Butler get mad if you say he was from Beaumont? Because he absolutely seems like he would fight you behind scenes.
Yeah,
he
would get pissed.
Yeah, he would get very upset.
I feel like anybody would get pissed if they wasn't from Beaumont.
Wait, now the people from Beaumont about to be mad.
No, I'm just saying.
No, you're right.
Like, no, I'm not from Beaumont. I'm from Houston. You're right. Whatever.
Yeah, I heard this, and it's interesting.
So this is Kendra Perkins on Twitter last night, 12:37 a.m., so I guess technically this morning if you want to view it that way. Yes, Jalen Green is struggling, but some of you casuals that never played the game at any level, let alone, interestingly enough, the playoffs, need to back the hell off. This is the young fella's first rodeo, and he's got to learn from this, but all the hate this young man is getting weak. Like, how do you parse that out? Because I do think that there is something to be said for, I saw, like, you know, there is a level of figuring out that he needs to do when it comes to these particular circumstances, when it comes to the ways that playoff basketball goes. But I don't think that speaks to all of this.
No, it doesn't. Look, that's a very small thing. And again,
now, it sounds like he wasn't watching the Rockets all season, man.
Yes.
Because this is Jalen Green, man. Like, he has some moments where he is balling, but he is very inconsistent, man.
No, for sure.
He could put up a 38-point game and then a 9-point game and then a 27-point game and then a 12-point game. That's him.
I think that is a casual. And I know he's from the Houston area, but he hasn't watched, to Figgy's point. And here's the other thing. Let's just eliminate this whole, the kid this and the kid that. I can call him a kid because he's younger than mine. But this is his fourth season in the NBA. This is his fourth season. It's his first playoff run. But
and it's first on a like truly winning basketball team. And I think you will absolutely agree. Or I guess maybe I shouldn't tell you what you agree to. That's kind of wild.
Yeah.
But I believe, let me ask you, would you agree that playing winning basketball is different than just playing basketball in the league, especially knowing the ways and where this Houston Rockets team was prior to at least last season and definitely to the ways that they were playing this year?
Look, that is absolutely true. But players who were either 22 or 23 in their fourth season in the NBA and didn't shrivel, didn't wilt like this. I just wrote down a couple. To De'Aaron Fox, his fourth season in the NBA in the playoffs, 27.4 points per game. Jimmy Butler, we're familiar with his work.
Very familiar.
Fourth season in the NBA, fourth season in the NBA in the playoffs, 25.6. Tyrese Maxey, 29.2 in his fourth season.
In playoff, these are playoff averages.
In the playoffs.
Got you.
In the playoffs. And they were all 22 or 23 years old. So don't come at me with that. Because players who are young are not really young in NBA years. You know? And that's why Jalen, we're going to talk more about Jalen Green specifically, but it's haunting. And that's a weak cop-out of an excuse right there.
It's kind of haunting because even when they wasn't in the playoffs, man, he was up and down like this. So it wasn't like he was out here averaging 25 points all season long, and then, you know, the price is too light in the playoffs.
Right.
It was doing that in the season.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Yeah. I wanted to give just some more context, but I think I do lean a lot more to where you guys are. It's one of the things that, you know, when we talk about the prototypes in the playoffs, you know, where do people slot? And I think that even in this conversation, we have slotted him in as almost like a Corey Brewer type, like, he might go off for 50 one time, but I don't think that you can expect that he is going to give you, even his season average of 21, 22, what have you, I don't think you can expect that is the every night situation, especially when you saw, like, the turnovers, right? It wasn't even just that the scoring wasn't there in the same degree, is that the entirety of this switches up where, I mean, even instances where you need him to be kind of the offensive engine of sorts, or at least the initiator, and the defense has switched up to where we are now doubling the basketball off of a pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And he's picking up the ball very high, and he's, you know, trying to find a way to pass out of it. And he ultimately does, but you can see, like, there's there's just the level of inexperience,
yeah,
but then also just lack of comfort and discomfort with this and all of those things, missing free throws, you know, not being able to finish, yeah, not being able to get to your spot and score while also having all of this learning curve. All of it just adds up to not giving you enough from the performance.
I mean, what has he played? 350 games? Somewhere in that neighborhood? I would have to. I'm just estimating myself.
He don't miss no games.
He's won in that arena.
Iron Man.
He's played 350 games. He doesn't miss any games, as Figgy just said. You can miss me with that, man.
All right.
You can miss me with that.
So I think that we've adequately done this, and I don't want this to be a bash on Jalen Green because he ain't the only reason.
Well, we mentioned the other things that are haunting. I think another thing that's haunting, frankly, and you have a great case on this, is how was that menace Draymond Green still in the game? How the hell was he still in the game?
It was kind of laughable.
It was. I was like, oh.
Oh, y'all was laughing?
When we were texting, as
if yeah, I was. I'm like, look at what he's doing.
I knew as soon as it happened. I knew
they were not dead ball. Tari Eason, yeah, where Tari Eason is pulled down,
yeah,
and then Draymond Green very intentionally.
Yes.
Like, I think let's be honest about this, yes, right? Especially Mr. Wild Legs himself,
yeah,
talking about this is just the way my legs move when I play basketball. No, it's not.
Nah, man.
We have played basketball. The legs don't move like that. You're not knocking people's head into the hardwood.
Nah, you need to play football, man.
I am so very sick of the NBA doing these things where they are acquiesced to him because y'all are only serving to make this happen some more. Like, you're only letting...
I knew there was
a flagrant foul. When was the last time you saw a dead ball flagrant foul?
I know.
Word, just to get out of him, throwing him out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it did not torpedo the league when, what was that, in 2016? Mm-hmm. When he got thrown out of that game?
Yeah.
Because in the finals, it didn't torpedo the league. You can give him the mm-hmm. adequate response for his actions,
yeah,
and limit these antics. Because the tough thing about it as well, right, is Draymond should not have been in that game just for, like, disciplinary, just mm-hmm. for ethical basketball reasons, just for morality. Mm-hmm. But also...
For morality, yeah.
No, yeah, this is it's the principality of the matter, Smokey. No, like, that is where we are.
Yeah.
But... it also then comes back and backfires because mm-hmm. it is when Alperen Şengün is going heat rock in the second half, yeah, it is against Quentin Post. It is against Trayce Jackson-Davis, mm-hmm. if that is his name. I know there's three names in there. I know that those are the three. I don't know which order they're in. But, right, when those guys are on the floor, Alperen Şengün is going ham. When Draymond Green gets back on the floor, and this is a testament, I will give him credit, to his defensive prowess, mm-hmm. is that's when you see Alperen Şengün maybe start to slow back down late in the fourth quarter. And that was tough because it felt like they had found the engine that yeah. would work for them offensively, at least in this game,
yeah,
and it slowed down at the wrong situation because Draymond Green is still in the game he doesn't deserve.
All right, so all those things are haunting. None of them are what haunting me the most is what's.
Ooh,
me the most.
There was you left a secret final option.
I got the big finish. I got the you gotta have the big finish. This is what haunts me the most. Ime Udoka, you talk about Jalen Green. Oh, you just can't do that in the playoffs. You cannot not show up 3 out of 4 games, and that's true. You cannot start both halves of a game like that. That is crucial. Just getting worked. They were, and I was texting you guys. I think I texted you. They only had, by my estimation, 4, maybe 5 good defensive possessions in the entire first quarter. They were on skates. They got run early, big time. And then what happened to start the second half? After all these adjustments, after let's see what we can do on offense, let's get out there and really take it to them to start the second half. 18-1? Isn't that what it was? 18-1? That's on Ime. That's what haunts me the most. You cannot do this. You cannot have a head coach that starts both halves, and especially on offense, that's the second part of it, where they have long stretches of just clunky uncertainty, unable to get into the offense the right
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
That's on Ime, man, and it pains me. I love that guy.
Yeah, do you feel like Ime made some adjustments at all during this series?
He has. Like, especially, I can
because I give Steve Kerr a lot of credit for making adjustments, even after winning a game.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually when you win a game, you kind of stick with what won you the game. He was still making adjustments, man.
And I think we'll talk more about this even as yeah. we go along yeah. during the show, because I have a question that I love to bring out in a playoff series on whether or not this is a solved series. I'll explain what that means later on. But, yeah, man, there's a clear coaching advantage. We knew this coming mm-hmm. in. I guess the question then becomes how stark is it I do want to give Ime his credit. I do think the defensively saw like the matchup zone of sorts that they were running out there did find its way to be effective once they settled into it. And you could tell that was not necessarily a matchup zone that they had run a ton this year, even though they've used a zone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were found a way to utilize it with Steph Curry on the floor, something I did not think you'd be able to do. So, like, there have been things that they have done to get themselves playing better basketball. You saw them flying around at points. It just feels like even as a team and with a coaching staff, there isn't a consistency. And there's not a lot of places to make that up when you're playing against a team that has this kind of institutional knowledge, this kind of experience in the Warriors. And unfortunately, you just let the margins, you lost on the margins in too many places, and all the little losses added up to a big loss, a 109-106 loss to be specific, that puts the Rockets down 3-1 in this series. And now they move into the part of the program where they have to try and stave off elimination. And
it's a must win.
It is a must win. Lopez, can we confirm?
Yes, it is.
Okay, it is a must win. And we'll talk more about that as we continue on in the show. But, of course, the next game on Wednesday back at Toyota Center. In fact, we'll talk about that, I'm certain, with B. Scott when he joins us next hour. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Just getting going on a Tuesday. Coming up next, a team that we've neglected a little bit in this time period is the Astros. Got a victory yesterday. And can we attribute this to Jose Altuve in a very particular way? I'll explain what I mean next. Hope you're having as happy a Tuesday as you can. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Reginald Atatula, and Figgy Fig hanging out with you here. The Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, always open for you. 713-572-4610, where Ocho says, Lopez, the only person that can stop the Rockets bleeding is Hunter Brown. He's been that good. Which immediately myself and Lopez asked ourselves, can he hoop?
I wonder if Hunter Brown can hoop. You think he can?
I think
I'm not going to look anything up. I'm just curious. I'll let you look it up.
I think so.
I'm just looking up.
He might just be a lifelong baseball player. You know, it's baseball. They just year-round, all that stuff.
Yeah, I really hate that we have done so much specialization because I really miss just knowing that one dude is athletic, so he probably did some other. Like, Hunter Brown, did he ever run track? You know what I mean? Like,
no.
There used to be a time where if you played any sports, you did some level track and field. But yeah, Hunter Brown, who is, I was looking for his dimensions, like how tall and what have you. Well, we'll find out. However, he was not playing yesterday. It was Ronald Blanco on the mound, and the Astros get a victory. They get a victory. And one of the more interesting things in this game yesterday, as you welcome in the Tigers, is for the first time since 2023, Jose Altuve does not hit leadoff. It is the man wearing number 3, Jeremy Peña, in the leadoff spot for your Astros yesterday. And that is a curiosity. That is an oddity. But that was not Joe Espada just doing things to shake it up. Apparently.
Don't give Joe Espada credit.
Well, I mean,
Wait a minute. I'm kidding.
You don't have to do all that.
It wasn't him.
That's too much. Too far. But apparently, in being the very involved and team-conscious player, although I do wonder how self-serving this is, Jose Altuve went to Espada and went to the management and kind of talked to them about, what do you think about me hitting second, or at least just not hitting leadoff? And you saw the effects of it. I mean, he knocked in Jeremy Peña. Actually, he had a homer that brought Jeremy Peña in this game, immediately paying dividends on that move. And so, I mean, first and foremost, like, what do you make of Jose Altuve, like, surmising that and bringing that up? And secondly, like, what do you like this move of Jose Altuve maybe now becoming your two-hole hitter as opposed to your leadoff?
Jose Altuve said, don't listen to Jeff Bagwell, listen to me.
I've often said that.
I'm the executive that you need to be listening to, the player executive that you need to be listening to. I love it for a number of reasons. I mean, it's still early, but part of me is like, why didn't we think of this earlier? Jeremy Peña, great wheels. Can steal some bases.
And has, five thus far this season?
You can steal some bases. Good, not great, but good on-base percentage. I think he's third on the team in on-base percentage right now. I mean, why has this not happened already? But I'm glad it has happened because it also helps Jose Altuve. I mean, obviously driving in some runs, you know, maybe getting a little bit of protection in front and behind in the lineup, and he's the best hitter.
Yeah, I think more than anything for me, just a better opportunity to actually have players on base when one of the guys who has actually been your better hitters has an opportunity to step to the plate.
Yeah.
Right? It's the bottom part of your lineup has, you know, showed up at various times, but just there's been a power outage with this team just generally, mm-hmm. and this does not. I'm starting to get to a place where I'm lowering the expectation of what offense is for this team just generally.
Sure.
I know the necessary caveat of it mm-hmm. is early and there's still opportunities for things to get better, especially when you talk about the players that are still not having an incredible season yet that I think by all accounts you can still assume there's more to wring out of it. When you still talk about Yordan has not been the Yordan that mm-hmm. we are used to. You know, Christian Walker still feels like there is more to be had from him, so on and so forth. I think that you could still get some offense, but at the very least, like, you got a guy going, try and at least maximize that by putting someone who is also getting on base and has that speed in Jeremy Peña ahead of him and see that go. And interestingly enough, in the piece that Chandler Rome wrote about this in The Athletic, he had some quotes that were kind of intimating that maybe even Jose Altuve hits better when he has runners on base as opposed to that leadoff situation, where I do mm-hmm. wonder if it makes him if it tempers some of the aggression that he comes to the plate with and allows him to even have better at bat.
Well, he's a free swinger. You know, he's a free swinger. He always has been. Maybe, you know, consciously or subconsciously, when you opening, even if it's just the first inning, when you're opening the game, you don't have a feel for the pitcher, obviously, what he's doing that day. So even the leadoff, I'm curious how many times, you know, this year, you know, what his batting average is as the first batter in a game. You know, because you know, now he might even have a better feel for things once Jeremy Peña is out there, and it's just good for him in terms of driving in runs. You can back up, you know, a guy that's on base that puts a little more pressure on the pitcher, you know, in terms of working from the stretch and stretch and such. So I really like it. It really was one of those moments. I was like, oh yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, you so very excited to see this. And I mean, I think. Can we say enough about Jose Altuve at this point? Like, I don't want to be the dude that's like waxing
poetic
in this moment, but not just good. Like, I also view this as, and it's weird to say, as I mean, the elder statesman on this team already, but like stepping even further into that leadership mm-hmm. role of this feels like something that, you know, you the type of story that you would have attributed to Alex Bregman at times,
sure.
right?
And yeah, it does.
Maybe this is heavy-handed. That's fair. You can say that, but it does feel like, okay, we're getting some of that particular style of leadership that we were wondering maybe where you get some of that within this clubhouse. And I mean, this is a small nugget if you choose to believe it in such a way in that direction.
And don't look now. Don't look now. Playing okay defense. Made a couple plays yesterday.
Oh, he looked very comfortable.
Made a couple
in left.
Plays yesterday.
Like, I mean, now they weren't able to get the out at second, but you know, the ball off of the wall mm-hmm. in left, right on the Crawford boxes.
Yeah.
And he saw it. He was like, he saw it all the way, knew it was coming off the wall, and played it off the first mm-hmm. hop, right? And in fact, barehanded it off the first hop, sent it into second in a way that felt like you had plausibly the opportunity to get the tag in there. Jeremy Peña did. And I was like, okay, or was it Dubon at second? I can't remember who was actually at second in that instance.
But, and made a running catch as well.
Yes. So I really enjoyed, I am enjoying, seeing Jose Altuve and the ways in which I think he's rising to the occasion mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, you don't necessarily assume for a player of his age and the ways in which he's being challenged, right? Playing in left field. And he's embraced those challenges on the front end, stepping into left field and now stepping into the two-hole. And one of the things that's nice about that is that I think it more comfortably, although you were already having Jeremy Peña a little bit higher, but it more comfortably situates that top of the lineup where you mm-hmm. go Peña, as it, I imagine he remains in that leadoff spot, Peña, Altuve, Yordan, Isaac Paredes, and then Christian Walker. I think that is a more comfortable five in your lineup.
Yeah,
there.
I don't think this is a let's see what happens move. I think this is a move that you ride out. For various reasons. Peña clearly is having a good season, the kind of season that at least the start of it that we were hoping for, and you know what you're going to get with Altuve. This is not let's see what happens. No, I think you ride this out.
Yeah, 8-5 victory for your Astros yesterday, and I believe that moves them to, if memory serves, because I think I checked this before. No, they're not playing. They weren't playing yesterday, the Mariners. They'll start a 2-game set versus the Diamondbacks, or is it the Angels? One of them eight teams today, but the Astros now just a game back from the lead in the AL West. So even with all of the ups and downs and all the trials and tribulations that we have lamented, this is an Astros team that's still very much, and of course it's always early, but it's still very much in that situation, comfortably in that AL West race. All right, You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. We'll talk a little bit more about that game and what's coming up today for your Astros. But coming up next, let's get to our question of the day. Let's be a little silly of it, obviously, about it. Tying back to the Rockets, unfortunately losing to the Golden State Warriors. There's been a lot of conversation about one gorilla versus 100 men. What happens in a fight between one gorilla and 100 Jalen Green? 713-572-4610. And also, if you were to possibly get a victory with 100 men versus a gorilla, what Houston sports athlete might get that for you? Let's do all of that next. All right, let's get into the social media nonsense. I don't think that anything makes me... I don't think anything makes me smile or feels as perfect the use for the area of social media discussion and debate as like nonsensical hypotheticals.
Yes,
I think that those make me smile. And one that's been going on since the weekend, at the very least,
at least since Sunday,
is would 100 men be able to beat a singular silverback gorilla?
And I thought this was up. My timeline first, man.
Not everybody. I feel like, or let me know if everybody, because I feel like this reached out
they
to a lot of folks.
They talked about it on the broadcast last night.
Talked about it on the broadcast. Yeah,
they did a segment on it somewhere else.
Get up,
too,
so. had a segment
I was watching the Astros on the Detroit Tigers broadcast. They talked about it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's right.
I was trying to avoid it, but it's like, we got to do this, right? Especially after last night.
Well, I mean,
I think the comedy will be
you decided to go after Jalen Green. I want to make it
clear. I'm merely asking a question. I didn't go after anybody.
Yeah, you said 100 Jalen Greens or a gorilla, who you got?
Yeah.
713-572-4610. What happens?
That's not going after him. Just merely asking a question.
You know what you're doing. that is what we in the business call a setup. That's what's happening there. But I did want to open it up to like, what athlete in Houston sports do you think would have the best shot? Because do we agree that the 100 men are not getting this done? Even though, like, it's a lot of dudes. Yeah. If we're talking, but no weapons.
Man, no weapons.
No. See, that's the thing. We talk hand-to-hand combat with a silverback, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a 6'8", 600-pound.
Oh, this man did the research.
Solid muscle with hands the size of a serving platter.
And we talk about the silverback.
Yes.
Yeah, that's...
It's the gorilla. It's the gorilla that wins. And by the way, I dug so deep, and I've been avoiding it, but this morning I was like, all right, I'm in. I watched the AI animation of it. That gorilla did some work on
this. Why are we certain that the AI animation is
right? I don't know, but it was entertaining.
But one thing that particular animation did point to is that, like, there wasn't a collective 100 men push. And I think this is the tough part, because the 281 on the text line, a gorilla's washing 100 men easily, maybe 200, 250. And I don't know that I'm certain of it, but the thing that I think is the downfall of 100 will still be the downfall of 200 and 250 is how are we getting everybody in line to go and fight this silverback? Because
my thing is, how's you taking it down?
Well, you have to outflank them. And you have to sacrifice about 30-40% of the men. Like, going in, you have to say they're gonna get split in two. Which one of you guys want to do that?
Right, that's the tough part. It's like, hey man, we just gonna rush them. But is everybody's heart gonna be in the rush? Because if not, then this ends up looking like a kung fu movie or just basically any action movie where there's like 1,000 goons, but they only step up one at a time to get their ass whooped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's how it ends up showing up in this, where it's like, oh, it's 100. Let's rush them. And then one guy runs out and he realizes he's by himself, and then his face gets ripped off. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm just wondering, who is the person or the people that will actually take the gorilla down, like defeat the gorilla?
It's got to be the second or third wave. And that means people are
like, are you gonna choke it out?
I don't, like, I'm just trying to,
I think it's like we are assigning battalions to various different limbs. You got the right leg, this battalion over here, y'all got the left leg, y'all 10 over here, y'all gonna see if y'all can get the left hand. Hey, y'all over here,
it's gonna look like 2-year-olds on a grown man's leg.
But this is going the way I was hoping. You're getting creative here. What happens in a fight, and we can go to other things, and we are on the text board. Between one gorilla and 100 Jalen Greens, only 25% of the Jalen Greens would show up. That's what I said.
Unbelievable.
A texter says they would sit down and paint each other's nails.
Oh, God.
Somebody said, what about 100 massage therapists versus one Deshaun Watson?
Okay. I think we already ran that experiment. So I feel like the Houston Texans got in the spirit of this on their social media when they asked the question of their followers, 100 100 Brian Cushing's or one gorilla? And I think that Brian Cushing is very in particular. Like, I know that Ryan Fitzpatrick put up a picture in response to that about how his muscles were bigger than Brian Cushing's muscles. And, dog, we ain't talking about muscles right now. We are talking about want to. Because there's one thing, like, if I'm talking about people not necessarily wanting to go and run up against the gorilla because they're afraid of him, I know who ain't.
Yeah.
Brian bleeping Cushing, brother.
Brian Cushing would headbutt him with
his bare
head.
But you'd lose about 40% of the Cushings.
But all of them would be excited to do it. All of them would be ready to go. And to that end, I do appreciate some of these ones that came in. Like Josh from the 832 said, give me 100 Azizes or 100 Will Anderson Juniors. And I think 100 Azizes.
I think Azizes is the answer.
I think it's a good one.
Yeah.
I think it's a good one to go for.
And we brought this up earlier of the Rockets. Obviously not Jalen Green, but Steven Adams.
Yeah, Jalen Green's just too slight generally. Yeah, I feel like we want to get somebody that has a little bit of mass to him.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Adams is a good one. He seems like he is at least at some point in his career, and maybe still to sometime relatively recently, if not now, held the crown as the strongest dude in the NBA, or at the very, very least, the dude that you do not want to mess with. And that feels like you got to throw a lot of those on the table.
He kind of give you like a Thor type of feel, or Aquaman. He kind of look like Aquaman a little bit.
Yeah.
He kind of give you that superhero feel.
He's that guy that is the nicest guy in the world, but once he goes down that road and he snaps.
Say, mate.
Yeah, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
You're done.
Say, mate.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I don't know that we've seen him snap in NBA circumstances. And we've seen
Well, he did with Jalen Green a while back, remember? I mean, not Jalen Green, Draymond.
Draymond?
Green. Yeah.
Did we even get full snap? Because, like, you see him just kind of like, he is the type of dude that will yoke you up with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he'll grab you by the collar, but also be smiling in your face. Like, that's the type of, like, he's just, he looks like a pirate at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel like that's a good answer here. A fair point, because people are coming up with not just players, but, like, plans of attacks here. As somebody was like, don't forget. A swift kick to the gonads will do wonders. And
well, you got
to
get there.
And
you got
to
get there.
That's what I was like. How many do we have to throw at him to distract him while somebody else comes around and flanks in order to get
what
a swift kick to the gonads?
What about walking up to him and be like, hey, buddy, what's going on, man?
You'd hear two sounds.
He going to Yordan Alvarez you beyond the train tracks. So that's what's going to happen to you. From the 281, 100 J.J. Watts.
J.J. Watt would be willing, I think.
Nah.
Yeah, he would.
I think Arian Foster would be willing more than J.J. Watt.
Well, Arian Foster would negotiate with him.
Arian Foster ain't in there, man. Arian Foster's like, look, man.
Namaste.
I don't know if that's the smartest thing to do.
Didn't he say he could fight a bear or something like that? Didn't he say
Was
something?
That him? No, he talked like a dinosaur. Remember that?
Nah. I think he brought up the conversation like I could fight something. A wolf? I think it was a wolf.
You know what? I think it was. Yeah. I think it was.
All right. I like this one from the 832. They said one Hakeem would slap the gorilla like he was Mad Max. I feel like in that instance, we got to say one Hakeem because I feel like that was the time period where he was in the slapping mood. Do you wonder if Hakeem Olajuwon carries so much gravitas that the silverback gorilla would know what time it was and chill out? Like, that's the one thing I wonder is, like, is there so much respect for Hakeem where the gorilla's like, you know what, dog?
He just got taught Nigerian, man. just loud like a Nigerian, man.
Jalen Green would keep waiting for another Jalen Green to do something.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. And other people saying gouge the eyes, dog pile, and then take turns choking the gorilla out. All right.
Somebody said 100 Ben Wallace. What about 100 Bill Laimbeers?
100 Bill Laimbeers is interesting.
They fight dirty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That 100 Ben Wallace's. Is there somebody said, can we just sacrifice 100 Draymond Greens? They might not win, but it'll be cathartic. It'll be cathartic to see. Okay. Do you have any other insights into this 100 man versus one gorilla perspective here?
Depends on what color fingernail polish they're wearing.
100 James Harrison's. Oh, that's a scary proposition.
Oh, James Harrison.
I thought about that.
I think 100 James Harrison's would just torpedo themselves. At the gorilla.
I'm actually just fascinated by how many people think that 100 men would actually have a shot. I get it. It's a good discussion because people are taking sides, and I don't know if it's 50-50, but there's a lot that think the 100 men would beat that silverback. Figgy, you put it the best. That's a silverback gorilla, man.
Yeah.
That's a bad dude.
And I think just like the unwillingness to quit, like just the animalistic instinct that we have kind of taken a little bit ourselves away from. I feel like that fear cut in on way too many of our 100 men as opposed to that gorilla. I'm generally going. And somebody said, question of the day, 100 Draymonds because you get 100 crotch shots.
Well, they'd keep trying. They'd kick, fair. Their legs would go everywhere.
Yeah, I know. Crazy legs. the one time where the crazy legs would be useful or beneficial. 100 Charles Haley's. Oh, wow. Yep. That's terrifying. And, 409. That is, okay.
What's that?
They said 100 Orenthals.
Oh, gosh.
But they just wanted to make sure that the gorilla was of particular gender.
Yeah.
All right.
That glove definitely would not fit the gorilla's hands.
All right. You're in the loop here. On Sports Radio 60. See what happens when we try to have fun? You go too far. You do. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's welcome in our guy, B. Scott, and also go around the NFL, where the NFL and Nike are launching a particular program to see NFL uniforms change. I'll tell you why, how, and we'll talk about more next.